Hello friends, we are on chapter 13, Know Your Customer. When we talk about know your customer, this has been very, very important. This has become very, very important when we talk about allowing any customer or allowing any person to become a customer. And when we allow any person to become our customer, we are going to allow him to maintain or build a relationship with the financial entity. This relationship will be in the form of maintaining his account. This relationship will be in the form of allowing transactions, cross transactions with different entities. And here comes the use of a financial institution for transferring money, for depositing money, and if the purpose is good and genuine, then there is no problems at all. But if the purpose is for some illegal purpose, if the purpose is for money laundering, if the purpose is for financing terrorist activities, then the banking channels or the financial institutions are not only in great danger, but the economy as a whole is in serious trouble. And for this reason, to catch such antisocial elements at the entry level itself, in case someone is able to submit all the necessary information that is required at the entry level, but we don't know once he maintains or opens an account and thereafter tries to do something, there has to be some way of monitoring his transactions. There has to be in some way categorizing him into different risk categories. For this basic purpose, your know your customer norms were actually brought into. When we talk about know your customer norms, know your customer is basically a due diligence process. Due diligence process for identifying the identity of the person, for identifying the address of the person, for identifying the risk factors, for identifying the level of transactions or monitoring the level of transactions he is doing in a specific way. And every financial institution have provided KYC norms for their industry to follow. Like we have RBI for banking institutions, we have IRDA for insurance industry, we have SEBI for mutual funds. So let's see some important provisions of KYC in this chapter. The first question arises, why should we know KYC? Why KYC? That is, know your customer. The objective of KYC guidelines, when we talk from the bank's perspective, is to prevent banks from being used either intentionally or unintentionally by criminal elements or antisocial elements for money laundering or terrorist financing activities. So, the basic idea here is to catch them at the entry point before opening the account itself by doing some proper filters as per the KYC guidelines. So, whether intentional or unintentional use of the banking channels for illegal activities will not happen at all. KYC procedures also enables banks to know, understand their customers and their financial dealings better, which in turn helps them to manage their risk prudently. In modern times, customer has multiple requirements. Sometimes he is not aware about his own requirements. So here comes an option for the bank to capture all his day-to-day transactions, try to understand what transaction he is making, and see what his requirements are for the future basis what he has actually done in the past or doing currently. So for this reason also, knowing your customer is very useful. But from a social security point of view or security point of view, this information not only helps the bank to understand his business relationships with his customer, but it also helps him to categorize to what risk category that customer belongs to. And based on the type of risk category, a banker can actually devise risk management strategies. Next important point is a banker loses statutory protection available under Section 131 of Negotiable Instruments Act 1881. 131, Section 131 of Negotiable Instruments Act in 1881 grants certain protection to the collecting banker. When we say collecting banker, these are the banks who actually open account for the customers. And if the account that is opened for the customer is not done as per the KYC policies, is not done with adequate documentation, then whatever protection that is available under Section 131 might not be available for such banks who were negligent in opening such accounts without proper documentation and following the mandatory procedures. The need for KYC has increased in recent times due to the increase in money laundering and terrorist activities, especially with the technology disruption, especially with the feature of online banking, anytime banking, anywhere banking, 24/7, 365 days banking. You don't know from where the transaction comes. You are not able to monitor the transaction as it could be monitored when the data was or information was captured in actual manual ledgers. And because of this, multiple risk has been actually arisen, especially because this transaction can flow from one country to another and it becomes difficult to trace their origins also. And that's why it is necessary to understand each leg of the transaction from wherever it originates. And here comes specific guidelines from KYC as to what sort of information needs to be captured, what sort of tracking needs to be done, what sort of monitoring needs to be done, especially not only for opening accounts, but the transactions that are being going through every account. Now, when we talk about KYC, Know Your Customer, it becomes very essential for us to know who is this customer, because everyone has different ways of understanding the customer. To avoid this confusion, KYC guidelines have specific definition for customer. And for banking industry, these guidelines have been brought in by their central bank, that is Reserve Bank of India. So according to the KYC guidelines, who can be a customer? A customer can be a person or an entity who maintains an account and or has a business relationship with the bank. A customer can be one whose behalf the account is maintained, that is the beneficial owner. A person or a customer can be a beneficiary of a transaction as permitted under the law conducted by professional intermediaries such as the stockbrokers, chartered accountants, solicitors, etc. A customer can be any person or entity connected with a financial transaction such as wire transfer or issue of high-value demand draft, which can pose significant reputation or other risks to the bank. So what we can understand is this definition of customer is wide and comprehensive. It is not just one who opens the account, but it can be a beneficial owner. It can be beneficiaries of transactions. It can be any person or entity which can pose significant reputational or other risks to the bank. And that is where the monitoring becomes very comprehensive. Now, friends, when we talk about monitoring of transactions, we have a specific law which prescribes, that is PMLA, Prevention of Money Laundering Act 2002. This specifies two types of transactions specifically needs to be monitored. Number one, your suspicious transactions, and number two, all cash transactions about 10 lakhs. What are suspicious transactions? Without we knowing what is suspicious transaction, we are not able to monitor such transactions. So here we have a specific meaning of suspicious transaction. It can be a transaction including an attempted transaction. So it need not be a successful transaction. It can also include an attempted transaction. Whether or not made in cash. So it can be a cash transaction as well as a non-cash transaction. Which to a person acting in good faith gives rise to a reasonable ground of suspicion that it involves proceeds of an offense specified in the schedule to the Prevention of Money Laundering Act 2002 regardless of the value involved. Any person acting in good faith has reasons to believe or has grounds of suspicion that whatever money that is actually dealt with relates to an offense that has been specified in the schedule to the PMLA Act 2002. So PMLA Act has schedule consists of different types of offenses, and if that suspicion is related with such offenses that are listed in the schedule to the PMLA, then it has to be or it can be considered as a suspicious transaction. Number two, it gives rise to a reasonable ground of suspicion that it may involve financing of activities relating to terrorism. So the first part, suspicion related to connection with some offense of schedule of PMLA. The second part says, suspicion that it may involve financing of activities relating to terrorism. There is one more, or appears to be made in circumstances of unusual or unjustified complexities. Unusual, unjustified. A garment shopkeeper, if he makes some transactions relating to some explosives, it is definitely an unusual or a complex transaction if it involves series of payments to multiple parties, which is not otherwise in his usual business transaction. So such type of transactions, if traced, it can be amounting to a suspicious transaction, or appears to not have any economic, rational or bona fide purpose. So absolutely it has nothing to do with his day-to-day activities, it is not rational, it is not bona fide, then such transactions can also be called as suspicious transaction. Now let us first see what are the general KYC rules. Information collected from the customer during opening of the account should be treated as confidential. You should not use it for cross-selling. You should not use it for any other purpose other than the purpose that is for opening an account. Customer's details should not be divulged for cross-selling or for any other purpose, like purposes. Information sought from the customer is relevant from the perceived risk. So when you are actually doing KYC, you are anticipating some risk. So whatever information that you collect has to be related with that anticipated risk or perceived risk. You cannot ask any damn information from the customer which has no connection with the risk because of the account opening with the customer. It has to be having connection with some risk because of opening of account. Information sought is not intrusive. You should not dive into the minute and minutest detail of the customer. It's not your right. Your right is only to get information related to perceived risk. You should not be so intrusive and make it appear for the customer without which his account cannot be opened. You are eligible for information as per KYC guidelines, not anything beyond that. Any other information from the customer should be sought separately with his consent and after opening the account. So if for the opening the account, in case you want any information for some project or for whatever reasons, then it has to be explained to the customer and a consent has to be taken from him in writing for obtaining such information from him, because such information is not to be collected under KYC. Bank should frame KYC policies incorporating four key elements. These are directly coming from RBI guidelines. And what are these four key elements? Number one, customer acceptance policy, customer identification procedure, monitoring of transaction, and risk management. So we are going to see one by one what these key elements mean. Let's first see what is a customer acceptance policy. Customer acceptance policy lays down the rules to be complied for acceptance of a customer for establishing a banking relationship for carrying out a banking transaction. So whether to accept a customer or not will be decided by customer acceptance policy. It mandates no account is opened in an anonymous or fictitious Benami name, which clearly means whoever wants to open an account should identify himself. He cannot open an account in any name which is not existing or which is not coming in forth in front of the bank to identify him. Customer acceptance policy specifies criteria for acceptance of a customer, such as documentation in the form of photo identity, address proof, and other relevant details to be obtained from the customer. Customer acceptance policy also mandates the requirements of parameters of risk perception and designing of customer profiles. Customer acceptance policy also specifies circumstances in which a customer is permitted to act on behalf of another. Customer acceptance policy also prescribes necessary checks before opening a new account, and customer acceptance policy also explains the action to be taken in case of inadequate customer due diligence. So, customer acceptance policy prescribes specific norms for in whose name the account should be opened. It specifies the criteria for acceptance, what documents should be obtained. It mandates the requirement of certain parameters on the basis of which customers' profiles can be built. It specifies the circumstances in which a customer is permitted to open on behalf, permitted to act on behalf of another, prescribes necessary checks, explains action to be taken in case of inadequate customer due diligence. When we talk about what some information that can be taken for building risk profile of the customer, what are these parameters for risk-based transaction monitoring? These parameters of risk-based transaction monitoring should be clearly defined in terms of the nature of business activity, location of customer, mode of payment, volume of turnover, social and financial status, and this all information is required to enable the categorization of customer into three main categories: low risk, medium risk, and high risk. So, based on the information that is gathered from the customer, every bank can categorize him into three type of risk profiles: low risk, medium risk, and high risk. For the purpose of risk categorization, a customer would be placed under low risk, that is individuals and entities whose identities and source of wealth can be easily identified. So any customer whose identity and source of wealth can be easily identified will be categorized into low risk categories. And this won't include high net worth individuals because we have a high risk category for them. The best example in case of low risk category are the salaried employees whose salary structure are well defined. So both identity as well as source of wealth is clearly known. Then lower economic strata of the society with small businesses and lower turnover, government departments, government owned companies, regulators and statutory bodies, NPOs, NGOs promoted by United Nations or its agency, all this can be included in the low risk category, again because of two main reasons: identity known, sources of wealth known. And what is the policy guidelines for this particular low risk category? Only the basic requirements of verifying the identity and location of the customer are sufficient. As the customer turns from the low risk to medium and high risk, the policy would be different. So let us understand who belongs to the medium or the high risk category. Customers that are likely to pose a higher than average risk to the bank will be considered as medium and high risk category. Factors to decide medium or high risk category is customer's background, nature and location of activity, the country of origin, the sources of funds, as well as the client profile. And here we require a special policy. Unlike the low risk customer category, the policy for medium or high risk customer would be intensive due diligence, and the sources of funds are not clear, then once again it will be requiring still more intensive due diligence. So what does it mean? When the category is medium or high risk, bank has to enhance its due diligence process. Bank has to understand more angles of the customer, account relationship, transaction maintaining, and the dealings that are being done by such customers manually or through electronic methods. We have known the examples of low-risk customers like the salaried people. Here is a list of examples of high-risk customers: non-resident customers, high-net-worth individuals, trusts, charities, NGOs, and organizations receiving donations, companies having close family shareholding or beneficial ownerships, firms with sleeping partners, politically exposed persons of foreign origins, customers who are close relatives of politically exposed persons and accounts of which a politically exposed person is ultimate beneficial owner, non-face-to-face customers, and those with dubious operation as per public information available, like cash-intensive accounts of bullions, dealers, and jewelers. All this can come under the high-risk category customers. So let us move to the next element of customer of KYC, that is Know Your Customer policy. The next element of KYC is customer identification procedure. When we talk about customer identification means identifying the customer and verifying his identity by using reliable independent source documents, data or information. So here the banker has to actually see who that customer is on the basis of his reliable independent source document, data or information, and seeing means he has to actually verify this documents, the data or information with him by seeing him originally, by seeing him personally. This is typically called due diligence, verifying the document submitted with the original and actually comparing it with him person. So this specifically amounts to customer identification. Banks need to obtain sufficient information necessary to establish to their satisfaction the identity of each new customer, whether regular or occasional, and the purpose of intended nature of banking relationship. So note very carefully, banker is not only supposed to establish the identity of each new customer, but he should also understand the purpose and the intended nature of banking relationship such new customer wants to maintain with. The policy approved by the board should clearly spell out a customer identification procedure, which means the policy that is applicable at the branch level has to be approved at the topmost level by the board of directors. This is also a specific guideline by the Reserve Bank of India. All KYC policy has to be approved by the board of directors. While establishing banking relationship or while carrying out financial transaction or when the bank has any doubt about the authenticity, veracity, or the adequacy of previously obtained customer identification data. So that this clearly means that once a customer has submitted his information and the bank has relied upon it, that doesn't mean that is the end of getting information. If there is any doubt about this previously obtained information, bank will have full right to investigate upon it, to ask the customer to give his information afresh and can again re-verify it till it is satisfied that whatever information that a customer has submitted is indeed genuine and true. The nature of information documents required would also depend upon the type of customer, whether the customer is individual or corporate, because individual's customer identity can be clearly established on the basis of the documents that are submitted by him. It can be a PAN card, it can be his passport, it can be various photo identities, Aadhaar card, etc., which will establish his photograph pasted on this document, as well as the bank can verify his identity and name. But when it comes to non-individuals, especially your corporates, your firms, your trusts, and others who have taken birth from the womb of the law and hence they are called as artificial persons, the documents will be differing. These documents will be specified as per the law from which they have taken the birth. So let's understand the documentation that is required for natural persons, the documentation that is required for artificial persons like corporates, firms, etc. For customers that are natural persons, banks should obtain sufficient identification data to verify the identity of the customer, the address, location, and his recent photograph. So identity, address, and recent photograph is a must for all natural persons. For customers that are legal persons, this is what we call artificial persons, banks should verify the legal status of the legal person entity through proper document and relevant documents. verify that the person purporting to act on behalf of the legal entity or a person is authorized to identify and verify the identity of that person, understand the ownership and control structure of the customer, and determine who are the natural persons who are ultimately the control of legal person. So here we need to look into various factors when we have to understand the legal persons or entities. Information other than KYC requirements. Wherever bank desires to collect any information about a customer for a purpose other than KYC requirements, it should not form part of the account opening form. Such information has to be collected separately, purely on a voluntary basis, after explaining the objects to the customer and taking his express approval for the specific use to which such information should be put. So here bank has to clearly segregate between information that is required for KYC and information that is not required for KYC. All information that is required for KYC has to be obtained on the account opening form. Any other information has to be obtained separately. In case of term deposit and recurring deposit, especially when this have attained maturity and at the time of renewal, you have already taken the KYC documents at the time of opening of new accounts. So whether at the time of renewal, KYC is not required, it would be required. At a time of renewal, it would be subject to revised KYC procedures. Now let us look at customer due diligence by a third party subject to different conditions. Records or information of the customer of due diligence carried out by the third party has to be obtained within 2 days from the third party or from the central KYC records registry. Adequate steps are to be taken by banks to satisfy themselves that copies of identification data and other relevant documentation relating to the customer due diligence requirement should be made available from a third party upon request without delay. The third party is regulated, supervised, or monitored for and has measures in place for compliance with customer due diligence and record keeping, keeping requirements in line with the requirements and obligation of the PMLA Act. The third party should not be based in a country or jurisdiction assessed as high risk. The ultimate responsibility for customers' due diligence and undertaking enhanced due diligence measures as applicable will be with the bank. So these are the specific points to be followed, especially when the customer due diligence is done by a third party. Now friends, let us look at this customer due diligence procedure, properly known as a CDD. For undertaking CDD, banks must obtain following information for establishing an account-based relationship with an individual. The very important information is account number and the permanent account number. In case permanent account number is not available, then form number 60. Where an Aadhaar number has not been assigned, enrollment is not older than 6 months, then proof of application of enrollment for Aadhaar. In case PAN is not submitted, then certified copy on officially valid document, popularly known as OVD, containing details of identity and address, and one recent photograph should be obtained. What happens if the Aadhaar number is not submitted? In case the customer fails to submit the Aadhaar number or permanent account number or Form 60 at the time of commencement of an account-based relationship within 6 months period, the account will cease to be operational. Till the time the Aadhaar number and permanent account number, form number 60, is submitted by the customer. There is a simplified procedure for account opening by certain entities such as non-banking finance companies, popularly known as NBFCs. NBFC should obtain a self-attested photograph from the customer. The designated officer of the NBFC should certify customer's signature or thumb impression. The account should remain operational initially for a period of 12 months within which the customer has to furnish identification information. So here there is a simplified procedure for accounts opened by NBFC. Number one, self-attested photograph from customer. Number two, certification of customer's signature or thumb impression. Number three, should remain operational initially for a period of 12 months within which the customer has to furnish identification information completely. Now there are so many instances where a customer may get transferred from one place to another and may require transfer of his account from one branch to another at different location? What happens about the KYC? Is he required to make a fresh KYC for transfer of account from one branch to another to a different location? KYC verification once done at one branch or office of the regulated entity should be valid for transfer of account also to any other branch or office of the same regulated entity, provided full KYC verification has already been done for the concerned account and the same is not due for periodic updation. So once a complete KYC is done at the originating branch, then a fresh KYC or a re-KYC may not be required at the transferee branch. What happens for sole proprietors? What is CDD for sole proprietors? Again, identification information in case of individual proprietor should be obtained in addition to the identification procedure for individuals. The additional documents as a proof of business activity in the name of the proprietor should also be obtained. These additional documents can be any two of registration certificate, certificate license issued by municipal authorities under Shops and Establishments Act, sales and income tax return, CST, VAT, GST certificate, certificate registration document issued by sales tax, service tax. So this gives enough evidence about the business activity in the name of the proprietor. What are the CDD measures for legal entities such as company? Which documents are to be obtained? Certificate of incorporation, memorandum and articles of association, resolution from board of directors and power of attorney granted to its managers, officers or employees to transact on its behalf, identification information in respect of managers, officers or employees holding an attorney to transact on its behalf. In case of partnership firm, certified copies of registration certificate, partnership deed, identification information in respect of the persons holding an attorney to transact on behalf. So we are seeing here, based on the different types of non-individual entities, legal entities, based on the law on the basis of which they have actually taken birth, the documentation also varies based on what is prescribed by the law which is applicable to such non-individual identities. In case of a trust, certified copies of registration certificate, here the important document is trust deed, identification information in respect of person holding a power of attorney to transact on his behalf. For opening an account of unincorporated association or body of individual, here again what are the main documents? Resolution of managing body of such association or body of individuals. Second is power of attorney granted to transact on its behalf. Third is identification information respect of the person holding an authority to transact on his business and such information as may be required by the regulated entity to collectively establish the legal existence of such an association or body of individuals. Now, when we talk about these legal entities, we can combine them into juridical persons such as governments or departments, societies, universities and local bodies like village panchayats also. In that case, what documents need to be obtained? Documents showing the name of the person authorized to act on behalf of the entity, Aadhaar, PAN, officially valid documents for proof of identity and address in respect of the person holding an authority to transact on its behalf, and such documents as may be required by the regulated entity to establish the legal existence of such entity or juridical person. Now, this is not just at the point of opening of account. KYC is an ongoing due diligence process also. What do we mean by ongoing due diligence process? Banks should undertake ongoing due diligence of the customer to ensure that their transactions are consistent with their knowledge about the customer's business and risk profile and the source of funds. So once a relationship is established after opening an account, anything that happens into the account has to be related with what information has been submitted by the customer. That is what is the meaning of ongoing due diligence. Type of transactions that should necessarily be monitored by the banks. Number one, large and complex transactions, including RTGS transactions and those with unusual patterns, inconsistent with the normal and expected activity of the customer, which have no apparent economic, rational or legitimate purpose. Transactions which exceed the threshold prescribed for the specific categories of accounts, high account turnover inconsistent with the size of the balance maintained, as well as the deposit of third-party checks, drafts, etc. in the existing and newly opened account by cash withdrawals for large amounts. So friends, if you note carefully, these are significant accounts which needs to be monitored under KYC. What should be the extent of monitoring? Should it be same for all risk categories, or it should be intensified for higher risk and less monitored for the lower risk? The extent of monitoring should be aligned with the risk category of the customer. High-risk accounts have to be subjected to more intensified monitoring. A system of periodic review of risk categorization of accounts with such periodicity should be at least once in 6 months, and the need for applying enhanced new diligence measures should also be put in place. The transaction in accounts of marketing firms, especially accounts of multi-level marketing companies, should be closely monitored, because suspicious transactions can arise from such transactions. When we talk about periodic updations and when we talk about high intensity for high risk, simply means there has to be a periodic updation more frequently for high risk and lesser for low risk. Based on that, what are the KYC guidelines saying? The periodic updation should be carried out at least once in every 2 years for high risk customers, once in every 8 years for medium risk customers, and once in every 10 years for low risk customers. So friends, this frequency has to be adhered to for periodic updation of different risk categories. There is a requirement of enhanced due diligence in case of non-face-to-face customers. When the customer is not an individual, it is non-face-to-face customer. Bank should ensure that the first payment to be effected through the customer's KYC-compliant account with another regulated entity for enhanced due diligence for non-face-to-face customer is a must. Now, we need to understand what monitoring has to be done in case of accounts of politically exposed persons. We saw they also belong to the high-risk category. Sufficient information, including information about the sources of funds, accounts of family members and close relatives, is gathered on the politically exposed persons. The identity of the person should have been verified before accepting the politically exposed person as a customer. The decision to open an account for a politically exposed person is taken at a senior level in accordance with the bank's customer acceptance policy. All such accounts are subjected to enhanced monitoring on an ongoing basis. In the event of an existing customer or the beneficial owner of the existing account subsequently becoming a politically exposed person, senior management's approval is obtained to continue the business relationship. The CDD measures as applicable to the politically exposed persons, including enhanced monitoring on an ongoing basis, are applicable. So we have seen here there has to be enhanced monitoring in case of a politically exposed persons. Now what about those clients' account opened by professional intermediaries? Clients should be identified when client account is opened by a professional intermediary on behalf of a single client. Banks should have options to hold pooled accounts managed by professional intermediaries on behalf of entities like the mutual funds, the pension funds, or other type of funds. Banks should not open account of such professional intermediaries who are bound by any client confidentiality that prohibits disclosure of the client details to the regulated entities. All the beneficial owners should be identified where funds held by the intermediaries are not commingled at the level of regulated entity and there are sub-accounts, each of them attributable to the beneficial owner.